I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. It's being described as a major blow to al-Qaeda. It is the killing of Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen. He was a U.S.-born Islamist cleric who American officials blamed for inspiring a number of terrorist plots here in the U.S. In fact, al-Awlaki had a reputation for being one of al-Qaeda's most inspirational leaders. His pronouncements in English could be seen and heard on the Internet.
And if you look at the wars, not only the fights between individuals, but even wars between nations and states, most of the time it's over wealth, it's over dunya. Therefore, the only justified war, the only justified war is jihad.
Among the acts of jihad he allegedly promoted are the Christmas 2009 plot to blow up an airliner over Detroit and the fatal shootings that same year at the Army base in Fort Hood, Texas. U.S. officials say that al-Awlaki was still actively plotting ways to hit the United States. Today, President Obama said the killing, carried out by a U.S. airstrike, is proof that al-Qaeda and its affiliates have no safe haven anywhere in the world.
Working with Yemen and our other allies and partners, we will be determined, we will be deliberate, we will be relentless, we will be resolute in our commitment to destroy terrorist networks that aim to kill Americans and to build a world in which people everywhere can live in greater peace, prosperity, and security.
Laura Kazanoff is a reporter for The New York Times and is in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Reconstruct the events for us today, Laura. What happened? What have you heard?
What we know is that he was traveling in a convoy between two provinces in north-central Yemen, between Marib and al-Jawf, two provinces where there is very little central government control, especially in this area where Anwar al-Awlaki was killed. Traveling between the two provinces, an airstrike hit his convoy, and he was killed. We also know that killed along with him was Samir Khan, who is the, I guess you would say, editor of Inspire magazine, the al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula's English language propaganda tool.
Right.
So this is very interesting. They both were together and were killed at the same time.
Right. And Khan apparently is a U.S. citizen. So this was a U.S. airstrike that killed both of them. Was it done with the endorsement of Yemen?
I mean, the Yemeni government definitely was doing a good job this morning propagating that, you know, that he was killed. So it certainly seems that that is the case. I was talking to a senior Yemeni security official a little bit earlier today. He described it as a joint venture. I mean, what it could have been is the Yemeni government certainly provides intelligence to the American government. And intelligence, maybe they provided intelligence about Anwar al-Awlaki's whereabouts.
There have been reports of his death in the past. How much confidence is there that this time is different? And what is the process currently underway to confirm his death?
That is true. For the Yemen government to make such a fuss about the fact that he was killed, that's the only indication that I have thus far that this is accurate. Because while there have been reports before that, you know, there's reports that maybe, but possibly al-Awlaki was killed, figures within AQAP that are more senior than al-Awlaki, there have been reports that they've been killed in the past that have turned out not to be true. But this is definitely, there's a lot of confidence put out in today's announcement. It would definitely backfire quite a lot when the government, if we found out that it wasn't true. There have been many statements, many people have reported it, and I think we've gotten some confirmation as well from Washington.
We'll come back to reporter Laura Kazanoff in Yemen in a moment. First, we want to find out a little more about Anwar al-Awlaki. And for that, we turn to Bruce Hoffman, professor of security studies at Georgetown University. Why was he so important for the U.S. to target, Bruce Hoffman?
Anwar al-Awlaki, I think, is unique in the al-Qaeda firmament in that he's a U.S. citizen. He was born in New Mexico and grew up there. He subsequently lived in essence, a cross-section of the United States in San Diego, California, in Denver, Colorado, and then in the Washington, D.C. suburbs of Virginia. So he had a real feel and a real sense of what sorts of propaganda and how to spin it and portray it and use it in a language that would appeal to really a wide diversity of potential recruits to al-Qaeda.
And remind us of the recent domestic incidents that have been connected to him.
Gosh, it's a very nefarious shortlist. It includes Major Nidal Hassan, who in November 2009 shot to death 13 persons in Fort Hood, Texas. It includes Faisal Shahzad, the individual who attempted to detonate a SUV filled with explosives in New York City's Times Square May 2010, and perhaps the most infamous of the lot was Abdul Muttalab, a Nigerian graduate student who was the famous underwear bomber who attempted to detonate a flight on Christmas Day aboard a U.S. aircraft.
And in the case of Mutallab and Nidal, these are individuals who actually met with Alaki in Yemen, apparently, right?
Well, Abdulmutallab certainly did meet with al-Awlaki. And this is the other reason that I think al-Awlaki is being seen as such a threat, is in the past, there were al-Qaeda propagandists and al-Qaeda operational chiefs. Al-Awlaki was really one of the first to transcend that boundary and to almost migrate or transform himself into an operational field commander, that he not only was a very effective recruiter, but he became heavily involved in the planning and plotting and execution of al-Qaeda terrorist operations.
Is his death likely, do you think, to cause real harm for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or is this just a PR coup for the U.S.?
Well, I think it's more than a PR coup, but I think the greatest damage will be that his brainchild on Spire magazine will have to seek new editorship, in fact, and that as a propagandist, al-Qaeda will have lost a key leader. Samir Khan was certainly its creative force, but al-Awlaki was its inspirational force and I think helped to put it on the map. But with al-Awlaki's loss, it's not only the loss of a key propagandist, but someone who did have an undeniable appeal to a very broad cross-section of potential recruits to al-Qaeda. In terms of al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula's fortunes, unfortunately, they've been on a roll the past year, and I think it's unlikely really to affect or have any dramatic impact on its ability both to operate in Yemen itself, but also I don't think it will really affect their increasing proclivity to operate on a global canvas and to attempt very dramatic and often very highly innovative terrorist strikes directed against the United States. That will continue. Al-Awlaki had no part in those.
Well, Bruce Hoffman at Georgetown University, thanks for your thoughts.
My pleasure.
Now we turn again to Laura Kazanoff with the New York Times in Sana'a and what the death of al-Awlaki means for Yemen and the region. Laura, what's the likelihood of any diplomatic fallout from this event between Yemen and the U.S.? Will this upset the government there in the way the U.S. going into Abbottabad to kill bin Laden earlier this year was a major faux pas in the eyes of the Pakistani government?
It's definitely a very different situation. For one, the Yemeni government is struggling at the moment. There's a lot of efforts to push President Ali Abdullah Saleh out the door, a lot of diplomatic efforts. We've stated we want him to hand over power immediately. It's sort of interesting timing. It does seem a bit like maybe they were doing this to try to prove that they are America's number one ally in fighting al-Qaeda, and thus the Saleh regime should stand.
Now, a few experts we've spoken with, Laura, say Yemen's future is pretty bleak with water and oil shortages on the horizon. What's your sense right now of the country and where it's headed?
My sense is if there's not political transition soon in the country, and that, you know, right now the country has just been stuck at a stalemate ever since the protests have tried to push Saleh out of office. And what that caused was the armed forces in Yemen have split. We have part of the armed forces that are loyal to the Saleh family, part that are loyal to the opposition, and it's really a government that functioned very little before the uprising and now hardly functions at all. And so what Yemen needs is political transition. There needs to be early elections just to get the ball rolling and get this country functioning again so it doesn't, you know, there's a lot of loss of government control in outlying provinces right now. And so the government can function again and function in these outlying provinces. However, if that political transition does not happen, then the future of Yemen will look probably even bleaker than it does.
The New York Times, Laura Kazanoff in Yemen's capital, Sana'a. Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks for having me.